everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy John Couch. John, engineering and producing our program. And together we welcome you to the Buckmaster Show. It's Tuesday, August 10th, 2021, up at our place. Good rain this morning. Maybe three kind of cells over a three-hour period. I'd say maybe dumped about an inch of rain up at our place. So it continues, the very rainy, and I'm very glad it does continue. The summer of 2021 is a wet one. We are in our 11th year on the radio in the Green Things Zocalo Village studio, and our home radio station is 1030, Tucson's voice for trusted news talk. The call letters are KVOI. We have our worldwide live listening on my website, buckmastershow.com, which makes it very easy for you to not only listen live, but enjoy all of our podcasts. And we have many years archived of our programs on my website. Our Buckmaster Show Live Line, presented by Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management. And we now will utilize our live line for our every other month series presented by our friends at Pima Community College. The series introduces our listeners to the talented and dedicated educators of Pima Community College. Joining us on the live line, Dr. Irene Robles Lopez, Acting Vice Chancellor for the Student Experience. She's going to share with us the success classes and other services that PCC offers to help new students be successful as they launch their college careers. Dr. Robles Lopez, welcome to my program. Thank you very much.
Hello, Bill. Thank you so much for this opportunity to join you and your listeners. I'm more than happy to share about many of the support services that we offer at Pima Community College. I also wanted to note that the college is open and ready to serve our students and community. We have support services and classes available virtually and in person to meet the needs of our students. So the first kind of program that we offer that just really helps students acclimate to the college, get to learn to the college, learn about our resources, is the first year experience.
Yeah, what is that? I mean, I reflect back to my first year college experience a million years ago, and I have to tell you, I was so apprehensive, I can almost still feel the butterflies that were going on. So I think that the first year experience is so critical. So how do you handle it?
Sure, absolutely. So what we do is we designed a program to help first-year students transition and learn about college resources, about how to use the resources. And so we actually have seven initiatives that are included to connect new students to resources and to really help them through their academic journey at the college. And so some examples of some of those seven initiatives, we have a Connect You orientation. And so that's where we show students how to navigate Pima's technology, information on our programs, our resources, all of our campuses. And so it really is just, you know, to kind of welcome students to Pima and really help them get to know who we are and how we're here to help them. Another example of this is Career Cafe. So we help them get connected with subject matter experts for career exploration, job search, resume writing, interviewing, cover letters, connecting to PCC job resources as well. And then we have another really exciting aspect to this program called Faces of First Year. And it's a Facebook Live series of interview sessions where we introduce students to key leaders and users of PCC resources and things that would really be beneficial to know as a first-year student. And what we're really trying to do is we're trying to engage students so that they know that they belong here, we're here to help them, we're here to support them, and really just, you know, guiding them and doing what we can to help them as they continue on their educational journey.
Then there's the whole thing about, not only the apprehension, but the whole experience, what student life will be like for the students. What can you do for them?
Yes, absolutely. Thank you so much. That's a great question, Bill. And so what we do is we do have activities outside of the classroom to help students get to know what their experience will be like, the educational aspects of their journey, and also allowing and really hoping to enable them to form friendships while building teamwork and leadership skills. So we have our new student orientation, which all of our students attend, and in that orientation, they get to know about our programs, they get to know about our processes, and really just everything that they would need to know to be able to come into the college and be successful, especially our first-time new students. And then the other aspect of being successful in college, of course, as you just mentioned, there's that academic dimension to being a student, but then also that engagement and activities outside of the classroom. So we have over 32 active clubs that students can get be a part of, they can be active in, they can actually also be part of our governance. We have a college-wide student senate and campus-based Aztec student advisory board that they can run for and be a part of if they're wanting to learn from that aspect of governing and being a part of, you know, student leadership. We also have some leadership programs. We actually have three programs which help to really build up their skills as far as emerging leaders, looking at advocacy, dialogue, empowerment, really helping them to look at all of those aspects and learning and growing as an individual, as a student. And then we also have another program called Aztec Gold, which is an advanced level leadership program with the service learning component. And so we're really looking at how can we provide those experiential learning opportunities for them to, again, develop their advocacy skills, just all of those pieces that really help them be successful in the classroom, but then also, we're looking ahead to help them be successful once they reach the workforce as well.
Let me ask you, you have a wide variety, I imagine. You have many students, I'm sure, come right out of high school, but then you have different age groups as well, older adults as well, correct?
Yes, absolutely, Bill. And so really our average typical student is 27, 28 years old, so oftentimes already has experience out in the workforce, is juggling multiple responsibilities, possibly family, a job, you know, other things that they may be responsible for. And so the way that we view our students is that our students are coming to us and they already have experiences and strengths that they've either learned through their family or through their life and work experiences. And so what our goal is to meet the student where they're at and then help them move forward, whether they're planning to choose a program to move directly into the workforce or if their goal is to transfer to the university. And so a lot of these programs are, they're wide-based because we want to make sure that we're meeting the needs of all of our students. And over the last year and a half, what we were able to do is to actually move all of these programs into a virtual modality as well. So if we do have learners that are maybe at work and aren't able to physically come onto a campus to attend a program, or they may be at home with their children and aren't able to come, a lot of these programs we're offering virtually or through Facebook Live so that they can still be a part of, they can still engage, they can still participate and learn without the barrier of physically having to be on campus.
We're speaking with Dr. Robles Lopez, who is the acting vice chancellor for the student experience. Is there a way that these students can have someone who, a mentor or a coach, is that available for them, coaching?
Yes, absolutely. So one of the things that we actually have just recently done is we've actually provided coaches, and these coaches are in our gateway courses and our developmental education courses. And so these success coaches work very closely with the faculty member and with students, and their goal is to provide wraparound holistic support services to these students. So they provide proactive outreach, one-on-one coaching, and they really make make sure to connect the student to any and every resource that the college has to offer in order to ensure that student's success. So we really are trying to be proactive in engaging with them, partnering with them to make sure that they are aware of the resources that we offer and that we're actually connecting them to those resources so that they can move forward. And, of course, our goal as well as the students is for them to complete whatever educational goal they may have for themselves. And so we're trying to partner with them and enabling them to make sure that they move forward and are able to complete.
When are your classes going to begin?
So our first day of the fall semester is August 19th. That's the first day of classes. We are actively registering students right now, helping students enroll, and we also have some excellent enrollment advisors. So once a student is interested and goes onto our website to fill out the application, we do have enrollment advisors that will reach out to them, will help them with any questions that they have, will be able to provide any information if they have any questions about the application process, the enrollment process. These folks actively reach out to them to help them with that enrollment process. And then at that point, then they end up attending new student orientation, looking at what degree programs or certificates they may be interested in, looking at registering them, and just really helping them to put their schedule together based on, you know, their personal goals, their professional goals, and any other things that may be need to be taken into consideration. For example, you know, scheduling, family, job. We offer many different modalities of courses in order to be able to offer flexible courses for them as well.
Dr. Irene Lopez or Robles Lopez, sounds like you've got pretty much everything covered there. You have thought of everything for the student experience. I appreciate it. Acting Vice Chancellor for the student experience. And I guess the best place to go for more information would be the pima.edu website. Would that be the best place?
Yes, exactly, Bill. We have all of the information there. Students can go on and they can connect with us over their cell phone. They can call us. We can schedule an appointment with them virtually if they like. They can come onto a campus. So, yes, various modalities that we are here to serve the community and our students.
Thank you very much. Lots of good information there, Dr. Irene Robles Lopez. Thank you very much, Doctor.
Thank you so much, Bill. Have a good day.
You too. All right. The Buckmaster Show and the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio are live line presented by Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management. Shelly Fishman just gave me a thumbs up. That means there's some pretty good action going on the street, as they say. And Shelly's with me right after this.
Vero Amore Restaurant in Plaza Palomino at Fort Lowland Swan and Dove Mountain in Marana are now open for limited in-restaurant and patio dining, along with takeout and home delivery. All of your favorite Vero Amore menu items, including Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, are ready for you and your friends and family. More at veroamorepizza.com. The Regional Transportation Authority celebrates 15 years of project delivery to the Greater Tucson region. As promised, the RTA has delivered nearly 900 projects from its 20-year 2006 voter-approved regional transportation plan, which is funded by a half-cent RTA tax. The RTA is committed to deliver the remaining plan projects. Learn more about the RTA's economic benefits at rtamobility.com.
Why is mining so important? It's the foundation of everything that defines a society. Everything you see is a product of mining. No matter when, no matter how, no matter why, every society on this planet has developed, grown, and modernized based solely on the minerals it could process. That, my friend, is why mining is so important.
Brought to you by the Southern Arizona Business Coalition.
This is Bill Buckmaster. You've heard me talk about choosing Tucson International Airport. While fewer people are traveling lately, our airport is doing even more these days to help ensure traveler health safety, including counter safety shields, physical distancing markers, enhanced cleaning, and more. It's called TUS Cares, and you can learn more at flytucson.com. These may be different times, but my priority remains to fly Tucson, Tucson International Airport.
MedCare to You is a new Tucson-based concierge telemedicine urgent care, specializing in caring for our patients in the comfort of your location. We deliver your prescriptions and even provide in-person visits with our dedicated staff. It's convenient, quick, private, and your personal information is always protected. Find out more at MedCareToYouAZ.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is once again welcoming guests to the gallery. Stop by or call ahead for a one-on-one appointment or even a virtual design session. Come by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, located at the southwest corner of Fort Lowell and Dodge. The number is 795-8226 and on the web at moesgallery.com.
Shelley Fishman is a financial consultant in private practice in Tucson, Arizona. The views expressed during this segment are his own and don't necessarily represent those of this station or of Bill Buckmaster Communications. Contact Shelley through buckmastershow.com or at shelleyfishman.com.
It's always fun to contact Shelley Fishman right here on the Buckmaster Show at about 20 minutes past noon each Tuesday. Shelley, how are you? How's your week going so far?
Week so far is going pretty well. You have given away the secret that every time I say something you don't like, you kick me under the table. That's contacting Shelley Fisher.
Yeah, contact. No rain at your place?
No rain at the place. You guys got pounded
got
this morning. We had nothing. Midtown, yeah.
Well, we're off to pretty good start here with August, so I think it's going to be a wet one. All right, Shelley, so the market's up a little bit today, not too bad. Yesterday, down a little bit. It's been kind of that way for a couple of weeks now.
Well, the average line is up, but we're at or close to record highs and kind of staying there. We've been staying there for several months. You get a little bad news, the market goes down.
The Delta variant has got people.
Actually, the Delta variant is probably playing out more in the bond market than it is the stock market. Mm. And the reason has been that anything that seems to affect interest rates or that is going to affect interest rates is you get your first reactions in the bond market. What we're seeing is long-term bonds and riskier bonds are doing fine. The treasuries are you know, bouncing around a little bit, but for the most part, they've been flat for months.
The big story is, of course, the infrastructure bill passing the Senate. So it's not, the ball is now in the House, the court.
Well,
they'll
pass it over to the House. It's interesting. This is, depending upon how you interpret the bill, this is $1 trillion or $1.3 trillion in spending on infrastructure. The interesting thing in getting the Republicans behind it is that there was almost no taxation, new taxation to raise the money to pay for this trillion, whatever it is. Yesterday, I heard some conservatives on television saying it's only a $500 billion bill. But, of course, the Democrats were saying, no, it's $1.3 trillion. So when you add up all the stuff that's there, it's close to $1.3 trillion. There's about $500 billion in new spending. And they say, as we discussed and joked last week, it's going to be paid for by the increased growth that is going to be caused by all of this spending. So, you know, they talk about dynamic growth that is going to add to the taxes, and some of that will happen.
Mm-hmm. But not all of it, I wouldn't imagine.
No, some of it is going to be unspent or underspent incentive money that came, that was originally budgeted through the pandemic relief programs. As we say in Brooklyn, irregardless, what is going to happen is we're going to spend about $1 trillion in change on hard infrastructure. On roads, on wideband, on broadband, on bridges, on the stuff that most people can get around their arms around and say, this is stuff we should be doing and be doing on a regular basis.
It should have been done years ago, people are going to say. But again, something that we raised just at the end of last week's segment, where in the world are we going to get the workforce?
Well, glad you asked.
These projects to fruition.
We currently have greater than 10 million job openings at the end of June.
Wow.
In May, that number is up from 9.2 million, so that number is growing. We have 8.7 million people looking for work.
Hmm.
And so, you know, the simplistic math is that, you know, we've got 2 point something million, or rather 1 point something million jobs that can't be filled for one reason or another. And that reason is probably because we don't have qualified people to fill them.
Hmm.
When you add $1 trillion worth of spending, and that's over, ask some people, it's 5 years, it's 7 years, whatever it is, it's going to be a bunch of projects that are starting off with shovel-ready projects that are going to employ people and need to employ people, plus the people who will be employed by the factories that need to produce the raw materials that go into that infrastructure stuff. So one of the problems we have clearly is that the skills that are needed to fill those jobs just don't seem to be readily available in the American workforce. And by the way, this isn't a function of the pandemic. You know, if we had the same conversation a year and a half ago, we had, you know, over 1 million jobs that simply couldn't be filled by the skill levels that appear to be present in the U.S. workforce.
So the workforce development is going to be a huge issue going forward.
Clearly. And how we get there, you know, you just had a guest on from Pima College. Mm-hmm. We need to get people into programs and technical programs and other kinds of training programs rather than academic college programs so that they can convert, in some cases, factory skills, in other cases, other kinds of service industry skills into the kind of skills that are needed by, you know, today's workforce that we just don't have. The other alternative, Bill, quite frankly, is to import that labor. We can fill a lot of the unskilled labor through seasonal programs that bring people in, you know, and
worker
and
programs worker. On a seasonal basis, right?
Right. But that's not the kind of openings that we have right now that we can't fill. We can always fill farm jobs or almost always fill these farm and agricultural jobs. The harder ones are the new factory jobs, the new kind of service jobs, the jobs that quite frankly we need to fill in order to make our economy continue to thrive. Now, in some of these jobs that we're going to see in this infrastructure, these are construction jobs. And we should be able to fill those, especially if they pay the kind of money we think they're going to pay, which is, you know, north of $20 an hour.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's going to create a shift in the labor force, and we're not quite sure how that's going to play itself out. If at the same time we get, let's just say round numbers, a $3 trillion human infrastructure plan coming through in the same time frames, that's going to make this whole thing really difficult to predict how it will flow through. But one of the things I think we can say is all of this government spending is going to goose an economy that is already in very good condition. I mean, we had a GDP growth in the second quarter of 6.5%. We have already grown our real GDP past what it was before the pandemic started. So the economy is doing very well. There are some concerns, and the market is showing some of those concerns about inflation. But the general consensus, and I say this, maybe it's the consensus that I want to hear, but the general consensus, I think, is that much of this inflation is transitory. Now, if the government gets it wrong and starts hitting the demand side rather than the supply side, then that inflation could be here to stay. But I don't think right now that's a big problem, and the Fed seems able to control it if they need to.
Well, there will be no shortage of finding a list of opportunities for bridge repair and road work and airports. I mean, that there's a long list, I'm sure.
Clearly, if you want to work now, you can.
Mm-hmm.
And we've even seen an uptick in earnings at the low end as well. So that's up 4% from a year ago. Now, if inflation's at 5 and earnings are up at 4, then earnings are running behind inflation. That potentially could be a problem, which is why people are probably waiting for these better opportunities before they, you know, find ways to put their kids in daycare and that kind of thing.
All right, Shelley Fishman, always a pleasure. You can find out more about Shelley by going to buckmastershow.com, and you can link up to Shelley, and he will get a hold of you. Shelley, it's always a pleasure. Thank you very much.
Have a great week, Bill.
All right, the Buckmaster Show continues at our midway point on our Tuesday afternoon. Historian Ken Scoville will join us next. What's going to happen with the historic UA farm over on Campbell? We'll talk to Ken about that right after this.
Enjoy the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at Tucson's original gastropub, Noble Hops in Oro Valley. Savor the view while sipping on locally brewed craft beer and enjoying gastropub fine fare. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, at West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and on the web at noblehops.com.
Have you ever imagined how your life would be without the modern conveniences you rely on every day? Everything you need depends entirely on products produced from mining. Without mining, think Stone Age. Your work commute might be a bit slower, but you could still have social media. Bathing shouldn't be a problem, but it won't be in a tub. So unless you're a caveman, you can see everything that enriches your life depends on the many miracles from mining. Brought to you by the Southern Arizona Business Coalition.
Are you searching for a sumptuous suite on the Italian Riviera, an exploration of the mighty Mississippi, or an indulgent spa in Cancun? Bon Voyage Travel will help you find exactly the vacation you're looking for anywhere in the world. With many cruises setting sail in over 1,100 hotels and resorts to choose from with our exclusive benefits, Bon Voyage Travel's experienced advisors are here to guide you every step of the way. Visit bvtravel.com or call 797-1110.
Vets working hard to save wildlife covered in cactus spines. A skunk left for dead, miraculously saved by a caring citizen. Those are just a couple of the headlines from the nonprofit Tucson Animal Rescue Center, where thousands of animals are cared for each year at its state-of-the-art Far East Side Tucson facility. Rescue, rehab, and release. The Tucson Wildlife Center, saving wildlife for more than two decades. Donate online at TucsonWildlife.com or call 290-WILD.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
The average person in the USA today takes over 12 prescription medicines each year. And if you're over age 65, it is more than 17 medicines. CredibleMeds.org is a nonprofit organization dedicated to helping inform you and your healthcare providers. Over 30,000 people die each year from reactions to their medicines. Don't be one of those numbers. Be informed and stay safe. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and take control of your healthcare by taking your medicines safely.
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio here at KVOI. And, of course, our live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Quick word about Green Things. Boy, this is perfect weather that we've been having to keep all of the plants very satisfied over at Green Things. They are waiting for a home. They would be delighted to be in your garden, and it would give you some color for this fall. So I know this is a great time to do some late summer and early fall planting. So go by Green Things, 3384 East River Road by the Rito River, just west of the Brandy Fenton Park. Also on the 13-acre site, the home of Zocalo and that great merchandise, much of it hand-carved from Mexico, Latin America, and Europe. So here are the websites, greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com. Let's welcome now on the live line Ken Scoville. He is the Buckmaster Show resident historian. He is a public historian, historic preservation advocate, and a retired teacher. Ken, how are you?
Oh, I'm fine. I'm trying to dry out a little bit.
Did you get a little rain this morning?
Well, yeah, I'm just at the lower end of the foothills, and it rained a lot of the night.
Yeah, it really did. Ken, today the Tucson City Council begins the consideration of the final steps to designate the University of Arizona 140-acre campus farm. Folks who've been around a while know that that farm is at Campbell Avenue and Roger Road. The farm has been around a long time, hasn't it?
Well, essentially from 1909, with an ownership of the city, and before that, early Mexican family.
So we have 14 city historic landmarks that have been identified as the highest of historic significance. And as you pointed out in your recent Tucson op-ed on July 28th, these historic landmarks really help define our city, don't they?
Right, and this landmark designation is really trying to bring certain places, certain events, and again, when you look at the Campbell Farm, it's an historic landscape, bringing in the public focus and provide a level of recognition and then also protection for them.
Some of the buildings, what, go back to 1910?
Yes, it was. It's really interesting to think about it, and I live fairly close to it and drive by it a lot, that it's just so intact. Some of the buildings are what we call Mission Revival, with the curving parapet roof lines, and those from around 1913 to the 1930s. And then there's even greenhouses from the 1960s on to the present. I don't think people are aware that there's being research done on growing crops, and maybe people are living on Mars.
If the city goes ahead with the historic designation, would that prevent the University of Arizona from selling the property, or would it be more of a tool that would encourage them not to sell the property?
Well, it's really sort of two steps. The designation is just a community recognition of how valuable this is to the history and meaning of the community, and if it was significantly changed or demolished, it would be a major loss for the community. And I, of course, I'm probably a little bit biased, but I think if the Campbell Farm vanished, that would be a tremendous loss to the community. And it can continue as it always has for the last 100 years. Buildings have been constantly added as the needs and changes and directions that the campus agricultural center have taken. So none of that would change. If the university decided to sell all of the farm or portions of it, then this underlying historic landmark designation says that whatever is going to do, happen, or change there, that the community has a say in that. That you're just not going to put a gas station there or something that wouldn't celebrate the historic nature of the farm. But in reality, the farm's been just doing what it should for the last 100 years, and it can continue in that same viewpoint. And just recently, an earlier article before my guest editorial came out, that the U of A said we had no intentions of selling a farm. There were concerns, and I actually wrote a guest editorial about a year ago, that I was concerned they were going to sell off some of the pasture land and have a bunch of apartments in there. And so this causes action in this developing this whole documentation of the farm with photographs and maps and all this. In fact, the nomination form is 100 pages.
Wow. Well, I hope they keep the farm because I like you. I like driving by it and seeing the animals out to pasture. It's nice kind of a pastoral scene that we can all use a little of that quiet, at least, in the middle of the city. Ken, before we let you go, August 20th is the commemoration. The Spanish established the Presidio San Agustin del Tucson as a fort in what is, of course, downtown Tucson. It was August 20th, 1775. And so we have been a city of Tucson ever since. What's going on for the commemoration this year?
I think the Presidio Museum, and this seems to be, from what my research is, did the only major birthday event for this year. But they've put together just a great program, and this would be at the Presidio Museum. That the gates open at 5:45, and the program starts at 6:15. But there's going to be mariachi music by Los Chiquitos, if I fail, so I'm probably not pronouncing that right, and then folklorical dancing from the San Diego High School Folklorical Club, and Wylam music from Gertie and Boys dancing. Dancing is also encouraged. And there's going to be all kinds of displays from the Arizona Historical Society, the Transportation Museum, and all kinds of interesting events. There's going to be a taco bar from El Charro. And it just sounds like, and free tasting of desserts. It just sounds like a very diverse and interesting celebration of Tucson's birthday this year.
And we have a big celebration, or at least we should be thinking about it, coming up here in the coming years for Tucson.
Of course, I'm probably one of the few people thinking about this. in August of 2025, gosh, it's hard to say that, that is Tucson's 250th birthday.
Whoa.
And I would hope that the Visit Tucson and all the businesses would see this as a year-long promotion and event celebrating not only the 250 years that we were established as a Spanish outpost, but the 4,000 years of the cultural heritage and people living, all different Native people living along Santa Cruz. And just to sort of tie this all together, we're also a city of gastronomy.
Yeah.
And all that designation. And that's another reason why the farm should be preserved, because of our whole thousands of years of agriculture, growing crops, and all the blending of different cultures and seasonings and food.
Yeah, I think that's very promotable. Start thinking about it now. Visit Tucson. We'll have to ask and tell our friend Dan Gibson about that at Visit Tucson. You could just see that little sticker there on the promotions. Celebrating 250 years, whatever. Ken Scoville, always a pleasure. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Bill.
All right, Ken Scoville, public historian, the resident historian of the Buckmaster Show. Coming up next, we'll have our monthly arts report. Margaret Regan, the longtime Tucson Weekly arts writer, will join us right after this.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local independent nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Green Things is a family-owned and operated plant nursery serving Tucson since 1970. Open daily at 3384 East River Road, Green Things is chock full of plants and pottery from around the world. Green Things is also now home to Zocalo, featuring fine Mexican and South American imports spread over five buildings on the 13-acre Green Things property. For more, visit greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
When the public weighed in on the first draft of the Regional Transportation Authority Plan, the RTA responded by revising the final plan before voter approval in 2006. The RTA is preparing for a new plan for voter consideration by June 2026 and invites your input on regional transportation priorities. A draft plan will be presented for further public review. Submit your input or learn more at rtanext.com.
Hello, I'm Danette Bewley, President and CEO of the Tucson Airport Authority, with news of our new effort to ensure air traveler safety and security going through our terminal. It's called TUS Cares, and you can read more about it on our website, flytucson.com. As you carefully weigh your decision to fly, I want you to know whether it's next week, next month, or next year, we are here for you at Tucson International Airport. Thank you.
Hi, this is Pam Krim, CEO of the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona, where we set the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the place to turn for objective and unbiased information on businesses. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona at bbb.org/Tucson.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. We are in the Green Things Zocalo Village studio. I want to tell our listeners about a place that I think is worth certainly a 3 to 4 hour drive to check out, Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. It's a beautiful area of the land of enchantment. And right now, what a perfect time of year with all the rain we've had. That drive over there will be green. And you will enjoy yourself immensely. Believe me, we send so many of our listeners over to this beautiful area of New Mexico. Start your visit now by going to visitsouthwestnewmexico.org. There you'll find a whole lot of things to do, ideas about things to do, and some great suggestions on places to stay. It's time for our monthly arts report on the Buckmaster Show, featuring the longtime Tucson Weekly arts writer Margaret Regan, who is also the author of two very popular and prize-winning books on immigration, Detained and Deported, Stories of Immigrant Families Under Fire, her most recent book, and the other book, The Death of Jocelyn, Immigration Stories from the Arizona-Mexico Borderlands. Margaret, you've been very busy. You've got a couple of major pieces in the Tucson Weekly. How are you today?
Oh, I'm doing great. You know, I just love this rain.
Mm-hmm.
I just, Yeah, it's just so joyful for me. I just can't get over it. Although I'm seeing the sun coming out now, we still had nice rain this morning.
Yeah, it was so nice, and kind of feels a little bit like Ireland, doesn't it? It's quite a show at the Tucson Museum of Art. The current issue of the Tucson Weekly, actually, it's the cover story about four contemporary solo shows at TMA. And the Willie J. Bonner work, I guess there's quite a few pieces by Bonner.
Yeah, he was sort of, it's four different artists, but Willie Bonner is sort of, you know, the oldest one in the group. The other ones were three young, really great young new artists. But this is Willie Bonner, you know, he's been around for a long time. He's in his 60s, and they gave him a big space, and boy, is that wonderful. I just love the show. I told in my story a little anecdote. I walked into the room. It's one of the largest galleries that they have there. And I was so taken aback in a good way at the colors. The colors that he uses are extraordinary, so beautiful. And I just couldn't help myself. There was one of the guards was walking by. You know, they're always out and about. And I just said to him, oh, this is so pretty. You know, I don't usually do that, just start talking to strangers. And he just smiled and he says, yeah, you know, these colors are really nice. And as I said in my story, we'll make that gorgeous. Just beautiful colors of all kinds, you know, mixed in. I've got one had lemon yellow, sky blue, royal blue, pink, lavender, ochre, brown. But what's really interesting about this, these are also very serious and sort of troubling works. You know, when you look at them at first, they're just so beautiful. But then a lot of it has to do about being black in the United States. You know, this one, you know, it's really a pretty painting. It sort of looks like a ship and there's a sky. And then I see that, you know, it is a ship and it's a slave ship. And if you look very closely, you see a crowd of black people stuck in the bottom of that ship. So then you're like, wow, you know, you're going back and forth, you know, between beauty and terrible things. So I think it's really brilliant work, and I just hope anybody would go to see it.
Bonner lives in Tucson, right? He grew up in Cleveland?
That's correct, yeah. And they say he was really into jazz. And you can see that, you know, the sort of the jazziness of the art. But I think he lived in Tucson for a while, and then the museum bio said that he was in another part of the country teaching all this time, but now he's come back to Tucson and sort of, you know, in a great, wonderful return with this great big show. I'm so glad they did it. I've been aware of his work for years, but I've never seen it in this level.
All right, that show is up through when, do you know?
Let's see, I got it right here. September 26th, so plenty of time. Yeah, and the three other young people are great, too. One's a Mexican-American guy. One is a woman from, Iran. But she lives here now. And then another woman from Asia. So we have really interesting, each artist, you know, has a whole different thing going on. So I highly recommend the whole show.
All right, and that's in the Tucson Weekly, the current cover story. And then in the weekly that is coming out in a day or so, you're profiling three different downtown Tucson art galleries.
Yeah, that was kind of fun. And I called it How Three Downtown Galleries Are Keeping Art Alive. So these small galleries, I mean, this has been a tough time for them, you know, with the not the vaccinations. No, we like the vaccinations, but, you know, pandemic. So there's an interesting gallery there called Gallery Tucson. It's like two with the number and then sun, but it's for Tucson. And the gallerist is a woman named Athena Russler, and she gets some big names there as well as good local people. She's got a Motherwell in her window right now, she told me. You know, Motherwell was one of the big abstract expressionists. So she does kind of big-time art, and then local artists who are very good. And she tried to open, I mean, she did open the gallery in the spring, and she shut it down again in June because she said she just wasn't getting enough people to come in. So now she's, you know, trying to figure what to do. You can go there with it, you know, calling her and by appointment, go in and see the stuff. And she's hoping maybe around October, given, you know, we don't know where we'll be with the virus at that time, she's hoping of maybe doing salons outside, you know, on a Saturday night. I think that would be very welcome to people if everyone feels safe. And the other two galleries are some who have been there for a long time, Contreras. Now, Michael Contreras, a year and a half ago, he was the one who said to me, I will not open until there is a vaccine. Well, now we have one, and he opened in July, so that's good. So he's got the regular hours, he's got the openings, but he says not too many people are coming. And then the final one, the third one, is Raíces, which is a wonderful little gallery, kind of Latina and other things. And they were going to open up this summer, and now John Salgado, who runs the place, says, no, I'm not doing it, not with this new vaccine, not with the new
the
Delta
variant, yeah, the new variant.
So it's interesting, you know, each of these three galleries, and they're all on the same street, 6th Street, they've all taken different paths. So the one thing that's really good about all these places, everybody has put things online, and that's what's keeping really these galleries alive. And Raíces, who didn't really do that before, they said they've been doing very well with selling things online. So, you know, everybody's things are changing all the time. And John of Raíces says he's going to always do this now, even when he comes back to having the in-person shows. Also do it online because it's a lot of work, you know, to put those shows up and also do the you know, virtual one. But he says, you know, it's a really good way to get money, which is what they all need now.
Margaret, let me ask you, at TMA, are they, do you have to make reservations now to go to TMA? That was kind of the way it started out. Is that still where they're going?
Yes, you still have to do it. And it's very easy to do, you know, it's online, and you pick out, they have like three or four different times during the day, and you pick that out. And once you're in there, say you went to the very first one at 10 o'clock in the morning, you're allowed to stay there all day long.
Mm-hmm.
But then, you know, for me, I never get anywhere that early, but so when I went, I went to the 2 o'clock one, but then I was able to stay until 5 o'clock. So they don't try to kick you out or anything. It's just a way of getting people to come in different groups. And, you know, when I was there, I felt perfectly safe. You know, it's a big space, and there aren't that many people there. So, you know, you can pretty much be by yourself. So,
well, this new variant has just, it's kind of a mixed bag for the art scene. We were just trying to, you know, get up and running again, and now people are cautious about, some people are very cautious about going out. So you got to wonder how it's going to play out, especially with our live theater art and music.
Well, absolutely, because they have all planned different things now.
Yes.
Looking at the Fox thing, they have somebody coming in August 19th called the Mavericks. Big Bad Voodoo Daddy, September 11th. I mean, that's now.
Yeah.
So I'm sure they'll all have protocols, but, you know, it remains to be seen. I've been looking at I go to the Arizona Theater Company.
Arizona Theater Company, right.
I have a ticket for October for the first show, and I'm so excited, you know, to get back. But then I'm thinking, I don't know what's going to be doing in October. We just don't know yet.
Well, let's hope by then things will have peaked and the fourth surge of COVID will have passed through. Margaret Regan, always a pleasure. We'll look for your work in the Tucson Weekly. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Bill.
All right. That'll wrap it up for the Buckmaster Show. On behalf of Margaret Regan, John Couch, engineering and producing, I'm Bill Buckmaster. Have a great afternoon, everybody.